This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Vision 2023 back in the podcast studio here, sponsored by Napa Auto Care. I am honored to have three terrific trainers in our industry. David Hobbs from Delphi Technologies. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me, Carm.
Scott Mann is here, trainer and AC Delco technician of the millennia. Hi, Scott.
Twice. Hello, Carm. Thanks again for having me.
Two times.
Great to be here.
Two times? How come I didn't know that?
Well, regional one time and then national the next time.
Thanks for fixing me, Eric, on that.
It was actually one of the first dates Debbie and I went on, was seeing Scott Wynn.
And Debbie's in the room.
I remember that.
We sat with her man, Dan.
Really? Wow.
And Lori.
Did he buy Scott's you dinner? Wife. Yeah. And that's Eric Ziegler. Easy Diagnostic Solutions, Automotive Seminars, and the Drivability Guys. You still doing all that work?
Yep.
Cool. Hey, plan to be at Apex 2023, October 31st through November 2nd. Apex will build upon the incredible success of Joe's Garage, a full 10-bay working environment. If you earn your living in the auto service aftermarket, then Apex is for you. Hey, let's face it, your shop management system is the most critical tool in your shop. And Napa Trax will move your shop into the SMS fast lane with on-site training, 6 days a week support, and local representation. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Look, you're here, important trainers. You're looking in the eyes of all the people here that are attending your class. Scott did one really interesting, first ever done training where it was all about scan tool choices, and also did a network class with Pico. And you actually substituted for who?
A gentleman named Matt Fonslow.
Matt Fonslow? Really? It was Matt?
I noticed Matt Fonslow wasn't here.
We have a contest to see how many times we can say Matt Fonslow.
Matt is here in spirit, most certainly. Yeah.
It's really unfortunate that Matt couldn't make it. We wish his wife, Danielle, all the great road to recovery. You got to tell us a little bit about this, Scott. It was ingenious to bring a bunch of technicians in a room and have guys that have played with just about every piece of equipment and take the questions from the room and say, hey, if you're afraid to get and buy and do, let's talk about the scan tools.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say that the brainchild of the class was Scott Schotten, who I co-taught this entire weekend so far with. But Scott made the point, it seems like every class that he teaches, at the end of the class, so many people come up and say, what scan tool should I buy? What do you use? What's the best? And of course, it is the unanswerable question in a couple of words, because there's so many factors that go into a tool purchase like that. So Scott said, I think we should maybe address this in a, you know, more of an open forum. The really powerful part that came together was the idea of, you know, certainly not teaching a class like that by yourself or with just another guy, but we got six unbelievable people in the front of the room. It was, of course, Scott and Scott, Scott with one T, Scott with two T's. Then there was Keith Perkins there, well-known, phenomenal trainer, as well as a mobile diagnostician. Sean Tipping was in the room with us. Tanner Brandt was in the room with us. Justin Morgan was in the room with us.
Wow.
It was amazing. So it was, you know, six people that really know what they're talking about, have had their hands on all of these tools, so that they have such a diverse, we had about 140 years of experience among these people in this room who have used all these different tools. Everybody got a chance to kind of talk about a tool, each individual trainer, and then ask whatever, you know, come on, guys, let's hear what you want to hear. And it was great feedback, a lot of feedback, a lot of interest in, you know, thinking, oh, I didn't know that thing did that. Or, I didn't really think about the power of that tool. It was just really well done. It was a great idea by Scott.
Will they repeat this, do you think?
I certainly hope so. I think it could be repeated almost continuously, and you could move different guys through this, you know, bring in some different trainers, bring in some different people. But how fast and how often do these scan tools change? It's almost unbelievable to keep up with them. So the topic will be fresh every year, it seems like. It's just not going to go away.
I love the idea that you believe it'll happen again. And if I know Scott, he'll push this again with Sherry. Something like this needs to be incubated over a few years. And here's why. I'm talking about it now, so that if you haven't been to Vision this year and you really feel that a class like that would have been beneficial. Now we're hearing about it happened. Scott says there was a lot of great feedback, a lot of learning going on. Why not come next year so that you can come in and appreciate scan tools? And probably a lot of guys have scan tools and they just don't know how they drive the car. I mean, it's like buying a piece of software and using 25% of it to do email and not everything else.
Exactly. And I guess, Scott, the answer is there is no one scan tool.
Absolutely.
Unless
not.
You have a very limited selection of vehicles that you're working on and functions you want to do. There's not like a one size fits all for every business, every tech, every vehicle from Audi to what's the last letter in the alphabet that has a car? Hugo? I don't know.
Zebra? No.
Vauxhall? I don't know. Guy across the way would know.
Was there a xylophone
T car? T for Toyota's pretty high up in the alphabet.
Mm. U for Hugo. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a great car.
I'm not sure. Was there a scan tool that worked on it? Was it pre-OBD?
It was pre-junkyard. Pre-junkyard. So, Dave, you have a class intro to PHEVC and BEVs and J1772 EVSE. What do all those acronyms mean?
Acronym soup. Electric vehicle supply equipment. That's the cable and what the cable hooks into, the line power or whatever, and the plug on the car. Whether it be, we didn't get into CHAdeMO, but we did talk a little bit about Tesla and mostly J1772, the SAE standard for the 5-pin connector that every PHEV. And then if you have a non-Tesla BEV battery only, you have 2 pins underneath that J1772 5-pin connector. They're larger, and that's the DC fast charge, you know, positive and negative DC. So we talked about the infrastructure, not in a political standpoint of, you know, where are all the chargers. Did mention range anxiety and some new technology, like what charges the car? Is it the cable, the 120, the 240 from the house or the courtesy charger at the hotel? Or is it something on the vehicle? And if you're a fast charge, what charges the car? At like Electrify America or Warner just purchased Romulus Energy Solutions, a fast charger company. What charges the car in those cases when you're charging in a 45-minute to an hour period? So that was all, I think, eye-opening. And then I had a little adapter, a little Clipper Creek EVSV tester. I plugged in a car charge cable level one to the wall socket, literally to a power strip at the bench, the table in the front of the classroom, and put a camera on it, the same kind of camera you're using now. And they could see using a meter on that little thing it plugs into, the little EVSV tester it plugs into the plug on the end of the cable and what each circuit did. And we actually broke the ground off of a little power adapter that I plugged the charger into, and one charger didn't care. But it split the two sides of line one and line two. That'd be like the red wire and the black wire of a range or a water heater.
So you're talking about
plus 120 electrician world.
You're talking about a 220 line with 110,
yeah.
110.
Yeah. So this was an adapter that came with the charger to adapt it down to 120. That charger didn't care if the ground was gone. But the little slower 120 only charge cable cared, and it wouldn't do anything. And the little Clipper Creek, and Fluke makes a more elaborate version of it. It catches that stuff. So techs don't know what they don't know. That's my point. There was one guy that knew. Actually, I'm probably recruiting him as a contract trader now. He came up and he was a scope enthusiast, and he'd bought a scope company, and he bought Auto Nerds actually. And I was impressed. Trevor. And he was helping explain the crowd. You know, the guys, the crowd that comes around at the end of the class that goes, hey, I wanted to ask this, but you know, there's 100 people in the class. So, you know, they come out around the table when you're trying to pack up. It's a good problem. And he was helping explain. I was like, you're kind of helping teach the tail end of the class. That's awesome. I got his card and going to recruit him.
Trevor.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about after the class. Is there a lot of training that goes on, or friendship, telephone numbers, business cards, ideas for...
The most important part of the class, I think, is and before and after.
So I've been to a Dave Hobbs class, and I'm walking into this new one. Do they come up and say, hey, Dave, I remember doing this with you? Do people bond with the trainer in all the ones that you've done, and then they come up in front and shake your hand and can't wait for the class?
Actually, I came in late.
That all depends if it's Matt Fanslow.
I got set up in time, but it's nice to get there early enough where you're all set up and you can do that. You guys agree with that? You do that rapport with people, and because the old saying, they don't care how much you know until they know much you care. So they like shoot the breeze. And
yeah, the answer to it is absolutely yes. In every instance, you know, so all three of us are vision veterans. And in all three of the classes that I was a part of this weekend, we highly encouraged everybody in the room, not before the presentation or after the presentation, but during it, to network. You're here. Actually, your experience at vision, the outside of class experience, is just as important or maybe more important, that you're going to create connections that are going to serve you for almost your entire career. So come to the class and pay attention. We all want that as trainers, but it's amazing to see the interaction, to join a guy's eye, that he sees a guy that he saw a year ago. He hasn't seen him since. Maybe he talked to him, but just to see the people come together, what they share, the networking that goes on, what Vision has done over the years, it's really amazing. It really is cool.
I heard there's like 42 or 47% new faces first time.
900 is what I heard the number was.
Yeah. I have 1,000.
Exactly right. That's what I heard.
To piggyback on what Scott said about being able to see people, not to be a wet blanket, there have been times that this was the last place that I ever saw people like the dearly departed Dave DeCourcy and Harvey Chan. I would be remiss to not mention that Ed Vision was the last place that I saw them.
Hmm.
So
absolutely.
I'm glad you brought that up. Same faces in the classes, guys, year to year?
Yeah, you always see that. You're seeing that. But I just saw who I haven't seen in a number of years, Rick O'Neill from the East Coast. He told me he opened a shop and just kind of talking about the fact that not seeing people that you know well, but then you get a chance to see them when you come to Vision again. And that whole networking experience is just amazing. You know, it's really a powerful part of what this is all about. And it's just a pretty cool thing to see happen.
It kind of explains, I'm thinking now, why some people who retire and not even in the trade. I see this with the vocational colleges inviting high school coming in for the dog and pony show and tells. I've been involved instructor teaching something to the high school instructors, and they're there at the college put their best foot forward, so they'll send their students there when they graduate from high school. And you'll see these high school instructors that have retired, and they're invited back, kind of like an honorary thing. I know a local WD, Parts WD, did that with my dad long after he sold his shop and fully retired. He was invited whenever they had a class in town, aftermarket class. I think it's an identity thing. We are just so used to being students and learning. Henry Ford said, you don't grow old until you quit learning. As long as you continue learning, your mind stays young.
That's my motto.
Yep.
Something new every day.
So yeah, the guy that had ATG, I think he sold ATG.
Wayne?
Tim Flannery.
Oh, Tim, yeah. Tim.
And I don't know what he's doing now. I haven't had a chance to talk with him in much depth, but I know he sold the business and he was there. He was here.
I hadn't
seen him. I was glad to see
it. It's amazing, Eric. I don't know if you bumped into some couple of shop owners that sold their businesses a few years ago. I bumped into a guy who's been on my show before, and I said,
Scott Manna.
Well, yeah, but...
He's not retired.
and what are you doing? He says, I'm doing stuff for the homeless and all that stuff, but...
Dave Denman.
Yeah, it was Dave. Exactly right. And I basically said, I've been trying to pull together an episode of shop owners in what happens when, and of course, Scott, I got to have you on, but Dave Denman, and I just listened to his story and I said, why are you here? And he says, I just want to stay relevant. I mean, there's a place to find out what's going on in the world of automotive. This would be the place to come.
Oh, I agree.
So you're doing an ADAS class, Eric.
It was a pretty full room. It was an introductory class. So
was Matt Fonslow there?
Matt Fonslow was not ironically there, checking. Nor was Scott Manna. There were previous engagements. Now, we had pretty full house, and we had some good participation. There were several different ADIS classes that were offered. I think Mike Reynolds is teaching ADIS for an ADIS technician class tomorrow, which probably takes it a little bit further. This was kind of systems overview, how things work, and different potential streams of revenue that the shop will have, the things that go hand in hand, like suspension alignment. Bodywork, obviously, is the one thing that work calibrations are required, but try to introduce people to an entry level to understand where to get the relevant information that they need to do it, and to not have them run from something, but possibly run to it, and maybe ask some questions, kick some tires, some different manufacturers that are here in the trade show. So
I was talking to a couple of shop owners, and one of them said, I got into ADAS a couple of years ago, and I said, well, how are you doing with it? Have you captured the market? And he goes, no. He says, I was in it too early. And I was really confused about what that person said, that it's not doing what the...
wonder if he invested in a lot of factory calibration equipment. I have heard that when you do that, you're so married to the... because of the return on ROI, return on investment is so long that you kind of want to stick with it. And there's a Catfield McCoy about whether the OEM-only target equipment is the only way to keep your shop from being a magnet for liability issues. And then the others say, nope, the aftermarket stuff, if you do it right, you document your steps, you're well trained on it, it's as good. So it's, I call it Hatfield-McCoy disagreement.
Eric, in the case of your introduction to ADAS, would someone go there because they're curious about buying, or now that they've got the tool, they just want to take it to a new level?
Well, I think there was a little bit of both. To Dave's point, we've been long on ADIS. We do ADIS calibrations every day. My business model has always been the OE model. I am married to OE scan tools. I'm married to OE targets. And I'm blessed to have three individuals that are in my employ that do it at a really high bar. But we are a mobile service provider. We're collision centric. So it's a little bit of a different animal than, hey, I'm an alignment shop, or I do some work for a body shop that's down the street. We cater to them. We bring dealer level diagnostics and programming, calibrations, mobile 1234 YF, connector repair, networking. We do all that in collision centers. Four collision centers. So
if I wanted to invest in go into ADAS calibration, of course, I probably would want to attend a class. I would probably want to be at a trade show like this and talk to all the equipment people. But I'd have to do a survey in my market and see who's got it. Is that wise? I mean, can you put multiples in a market and be successful? And I know I get the mobile thing. I really understand the mobile thing, but there are some brick and mortar ADAS.
Oh, absolutely. And there are places like Ulmer's in Kansas City that have two shop operation that also have an ADAS calibration center and also have a mobile contingent to that as well. And my friend Kirk Holland in College Station, Texas has a brick and mortar workshop and has a mobile service provider, has mobile locksmithing services, EEPROM services and stuff like that. So it's really casting a wider net, but it goes hand in hand with a lot of stuff that everyday brick and mortar shops do. That take Toyota, for example, if you remove the bumper cover in any way, shape or form to put a right front headlight in or take a hidden bolt off, the minute you loosen the bumper cover, you remove it, Toyota says that has to be calibrated. And you can get in the Toyota market to do Toyota factory OE calibrations. The problem is getting the target. The target isn't anything fancy, but you can buy the stand and the triangle when you can get it for under $400. And you can buy a Toyota factory scan tool, the Toyota Techstream Lite, with a year subscription for flashes, a year service information, and a year's Identifix with Toyota Lexus Scion vehicles and the interface for $1,545. That's silly money to be in the game for under $2,000. You can be doing the factory calibrations on a Toyota vehicle.
But how many know they have to do that?
Anybody that reads service information.
Yeah, there you go.
Not to be a smart aleck, but that's the crux to all
of it.
That's
the R word, man.
And one of our shows recently, I can't remember, Trace, if you could remind me who it was. They said one of the most important things that this trainer was offering to the industry was read. The number one thing.
Was it Chris Chesney?
Chris Chesney. Yeah, it was Chris Chesney.
At Max?
Well, not at Max, but we interviewed him. Recent town hall, it came out yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah. And he says, read. We were talking about the technology tsunami.
Yep.
And the future shop with Chris and Jake Sorensen and Derek Coffin. Just a fabulous episode. And Chris says, what we're going to have to know is the R word and read. And so thank you for saying that and bringing that up. We can't get away from that.
I can't remember a time where my dad, when he ran a shop, my mentor and my teacher for years, sat down at the family kitchen table for breakfast or sometimes dinner without a Motor Age or Max service report in front of him at the kitchen table reading it.
How about you? I bet you, Scott.
Oh, absolutely.
Always.
But, you know, Dave said a few moments ago about the we don't know what we don't know. I love that statement because I've used it many times, and I don't even think we've scratched the surface of ADAS training yet. I think I have not, unfortunately, been able to sit in on Eric's class, but I'll bet you it is a class that should be required in shops all over the country. We are in an information overload. So yes, we say guys need to read more, guys need to get exposed to more, but we're already exposed to an incredible amount of stuff just in work, besides outside of the work venue. And there's, I'm sure, tens of thousands of technicians that are not familiar with what Eric just talked about. Oh, I'm pulling this car apart because I got to put a condenser in or something. You know, I put it back together, and there's been many articles written so far about how many vehicles are out on the road that have left either collision centers or repair shops that are in need of some form of an ADAS calibration that has not been done.
70%.
I'm not
sure where the number comes from, but the number that I've here published is 70%. And to piggyback on Scott's comment and Dave's comment on information, we talked a little bit about it in class. Like, I'm old enough to remember the Chilton manuals, motor manuals that were bound, and the salesman that would come around. And If you were lucky, you had the motor that came in the three-ring binders, so you could get those. They could mail those to you, and you could add them. If you had to get the hardbound ones, you had to wait for the publisher, Rand McNally or whoever it was, to bind the books, to print the publications, to go through proofreading. They were always like 2 years behind. Now we have the Library of Congress at our fingertips through our phone. And I said, like, we're in the information overload age now. We're like, it's like drinking from a fire hose, literally. And it's being able to sort through what you need to do your job accurately. And there was a time when you could put a timing belt on a four-cylinder Chrysler and you could line the dot up on the crank and the two little arrows were perpendicular with the head, set the tensioner on the belt, and every one of us has done 500 of them. Didn't think twice about doing it. Now you move fast forward into a late model Volvo. I still don't do internal engine work, but if you do and you try to do those, from my understanding, without the setup jigs to do that, that you can have a catastrophic engine failure. So it's not only the specialty tool, but it's on how to apply the specialty tool. And first and foremost, to read the service information before you begin the procedure, to know that you need said tool and know the procedure that you need to employ said tool at.
If you went to Apex 2022, then you realized the incredible commitment that Apex has to the service professional. Joe's Garage is your place with 10 working bays as you experienced real live working conditions. Also, the best tech companies from tools and repair to management software had their latest and greatest for you. You also attended technical and business management training with the industry's best and brightest. Now, work is underway to make next year's Apex 2023 have even more product demos, trending training, marketing, and social media support to help you grow your sales and profits. Remember, if you earn your living in the aftermarket, then Apex is the expo for you. Continue listening as we bring you the latest from Apex 2023. Save the date, October 31st through November 2nd, 2023. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. NapaTrax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. NapaTrax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com.
I got to make a comment about everyone should take an ADAS class, and I can draw the parallel to electric class and how often so many technicians need to go. We don't want to say the word basic electricity, but because they won't go if it says basic electricity. But even if you're not doing ADAS calibrations, to understand that if you touch this particular component or job, that you may have to send it out to the ADAS calibration center or call a mobile tech.
Yes, correct. That's a good point. I've said this for years. Sometimes it's worth 2-3 hours, 4 hours, whatever, to take a class to find out. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to invest in the time and the equipment, but I'm going to sublet it. I'm going to call Eric and have the mobile side come to my shop or bring my vehicle to their brick and mortar facility. It's not worth it. It doesn't fit my business model.
Yeah, you're right. If I was an owner and I was looking at the vision training and my people were going, and we don't do ADAS calibrations. We don't. But we need to know and respect it. So I would make sure that my team goes to one of Eric's classes or Mike Reynolds or whatever, occasionally, because it's going to constantly evolve, right?
Well, it does evolve. And I think there's a bubble on it to a certain degree. And to your basic electricity class, I couldn't agree more. I've always been of the volition from my mentor. He said, Mr. Scott Shotton across the, or not Scott Shotton, Scott Manna, Scott with
you
one
sure,
T.
You sure didn't mean to say Matt Fonslow?
No, I didn't mean to say Matt Fonslow. We've already said that 5 times now, but who's counting? Scott Manna told me a long time ago, if you want to have a popular class, you mention 3 things, advanced, General Motors, and drivability, and you will have people in seats. And he's 100% right when it comes to electricity and electrical
electrical classes, like even though they are a base electricity class, if you call it basic, no one will show up. If you call it advanced, you will get people that show up. And even the people that think that they are advanced don't know how to properly do a loaded voltage drop test or something that is so fundamentally important, because they either learned it the wrong way and have to be retrained again. And there was so much of that that went on with, I thought of that when Dave made the comment about not your grandfather's Oldsmobile. Now, there's a lot of stuff that we were grandfathered in on, and like, oh, it's nuts and bolts, like timing chain. How hard could it be? I've done 100 of them, right? It's 350 Chevy. You line the dots up, you're good. Volvo, you put, not picking on Volvo, or any double overhead cam variable valve timing engine, it may not even have witness keys on the crankshaft or the camshaft. You may have to put a blanking plug in. All those things that were just givens to our automotive forefathers. Both their dads worked in the industry. My father did not. But you know what I mean? You probably grew up knowing those things that, hey, this turns that. You had to have a good mechanical eye, they used to say, for things. I think nowadays you have to have a good electronic eye. Mm-hmm. And you have to be able to decipher electronic relationships, not only with a scope, but within scan data. If, then, what? How these things work together. And I think that root problem solving, because I've had no pedigree in automotive. I started out pushing a broom. I've never even had high school auto mechanics. That everything I had to learn on the job. Some of it I had to relearn things I was taught. But the thing that I think that is overlooked, and I sometimes take some pushback from instructors in college, they spend a year on the machining of the block and then doing a proper valve job. And you're never going to do that fit an engine or fit wrist pins in a car unless you're doing like performance work or something like that. What they should spend a year on is root problem solving. You know what I mean?
Critical thinking.
And critical thinking is another way.
Yeah.
You got your plug in. We got to say Jerry G. Tregulia on critical thinking, right? So since we're name dropping their classes.
Karm, everything's changed and yet nothing's changed. You
know, I love that.
The industry is moving at warp speed, but yet standing back and looking at the industry, being involved in it for the amount of time that I've been involved with it, I see the same thing today that I saw 30 years ago. We have the same problems. The industry is still a flat rate, get the car done industry. So the technicians, unfortunately, are compensated and are pushed to move the car through. And that limits their time and their ability to look up service information, to look up a job that they think they know how to do it, but yet they don't know how to do it. Okay, so I have an oil leak and I'm going to put a front crank seal in this car. And I've done that so many times, but I don't pay attention to the fact, as Eric pointed out, that, oh, on this car, if I take that front crank bolt loose, the timing might move because components aren't keyed like they were in old cars. And all of a sudden, when I go to start the car, I just launch the motor for doing a front crank seal in a car. So that's where things have to slow down a little bit. And I see the same electrical problems all the time that you would think, I don't want to teach an electrical class anymore. I've taught it enough. It got taught in, you know, at the tech schools, and yet the techs are still out there making the same mistakes. Mm-hmm. You know, the same stuff just keeps happening.
Do we not give them enough time to figure this thing out? Does it go back to reading? Does it go back to networking?
Absolutely. Now, I mean, certainly Eric and I have both said this, you know, many times to people. You're doing a class, and especially at a venue like Vision, you're doing a class and you're going, all the people that need to be in this class are not here.
Jim Linder, the Jim Linder quote, people that need training are not here.
I remember him saying
you know,
that.
Probably don't need this class. You know, all the people that need this class are that's the industry problem, are the people that don't go to updated training. They struggle to ever get out of their shops. They're on an island. They don't network with other people. If they did, maybe they would hear in a story or whatever. And it's easier than ever now because, you know, we have social media, we have Facebook. They can hear the horror story that happened to the other guy in the shop down the street that, oh, you know, I did that job. And guess what happened? We bought a motor for that car, you know. So however you get that information, you need to get that information, whether it's attending formal training, whether it's spending time on outside the job on social networks, but you have to network. You have to have that networking to keep up.
Guys, I recently did an episode with Ken Zanders, and this buddy of his named Harry. It was When Kenny Met Harry, kind of a subtitle of it. And I was in Philadelphia with Ken, probably about 4 or 5 months ago. Me and Tracy, we were outside having dinner, and he tells us the story about, Kenny, you don't understand. I got to make money. He calls him for the silver bullet, and he goes, I'm sorry, I'm not giving it to you. He says, Kenny, you don't understand. So Harry gets a chance to do business with a really big fleet, and the fleet is requiring him to document the diagnostic issues that are going on with the vehicle so that, because if he could document what's going on with these most identical vehicles, then he can fix them quicker and faster and better. And he said, I'll pay you to document the diagnostics. They want to pay him X amount of time. I don't remember how much it was to do that. And Kenny said, what an incredible learning curve where this guy, if he can get this business, is going to change him from quick and fast to slow and meaningful, if those are the right combination of words.
Well, both of them can be done at the same time if you get into the procedural thing. Like my classes in general are logical progression, or something as simple as scanning every car that you work on. My friend Kirk Holland in College Station, they have a service writer that goes out that takes 6 pictures of the car. When the car is dropped off, the service writer runs a full scan on the vehicle. It is attached to every one of the invoices. So something as simple as, oh, it had an EVAP code, it had a cracked hose in it, we replaced it, it had this code when we started, and now it does not. Here's the validation. Here's the where it passed the EVAP test. That is all stapled digitally to the work order. And the customer comes in, maybe has nefarious intent, and says, oh, you fixed my car, it's great, but it's a big scratch down the side where that pickup truck was parked next to it. You have no leg to stand on other than, oh no, that looks covered in dust and the scratches underneath the dust, right? Well, here's the picture of when you came in, you know what I mean? Not that people are all bad in that regard, but it is a procedural thing that every car, every time, pictures, post-scans, pre-scans are all part of that CYA. And I think that piggybacking on what Scott had said, that Justin Morgan said it best when he said it in his class yesterday, we sell our soul in this industry 6 minutes at a time. And for those that don't understand that, that's a tenth of an hour flat rate. And we sell our soul every day that way. Then you have the whole business management side. Are you charging enough for diagnostics? Or the
Are we?
I mean, I make my business charging for diagnostics. I am a firm believer in it. But there's the race to the bottom is going to kill all of us. If you predicate what your labor rate is from the guy down the street, antitrust laws say that you can't talk about dollars and cents at conferences or whatever. If somebody's going to do the job for 200 coconuts, or somebody down the street will do it for 150, somebody that'll do it for $100, there's some guy on Craigslist that'll do it for bag of pretzels and a 6-pack of beer. You know what I mean? Those people are out there. They dilute our industry, unfortunately. And the other thing that I'm passionate about is our professionalism. I've often said if I won $1 billion, I would do a reality TV show about our industry. And I'm not talking about putting $15,000 for the stereo equipment in a $1,500 Chevy Cruze, or putting a 6.6 Duramax in a John Deere 110 tractor with an 8-inch bank exhaust. I would tell the story of my people, the people who work in the trenches every day, who ride on EMS buses, who are volunteer firefighters, who are big brothers, big sisters, people who are single parents, people who do all these things on top of it that have to be, and this segues back to, do we not give them enough time? They have to be plumbers. They have to be electricians. They have to be IT network specialists. They have to be machinists. They have to be millwrights. They have to be all these things, to wear all these hats, to wear to be an automotive technician. And the last time that I ever saw anything that had any kind of positive light that let the public know about what we do is honorable and fulfilling, rewarding, but a hard job, is I go back to that ad that Snap-on had on the back of the liftgate truck. When was the last time you saw, learned the value of a good mechanic? They've got this little cute white kid sitting in a radio flyer with one of the wheels that fell off and a golden retriever pulling it. The public does not know what it takes in commitment, the tireless amount of dedication that it takes to do this career. That how many shops, when the flat tire comes in on the car going thump, 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 and it's date night or it's Friday night or it's your kid's baseball game and it's pouring rain and the woman's in the car, she's got 3 kids in a car seat, she's got $2.20 in her pocket, it's got a flat tire. How many times did one of us, we didn't flip the sign and say, sorry, we're closed, go down the road, here's a number for a tow truck, that she said, oh, geez. I can tell you on more than one hand the times that I pulled a used tire off the rack, maybe even paid my boss for the used tire, busted it down, put it on, followed them down, put gas in their car. Some people came back, paid it back, others didn't. But that's the selflessness of people, not just myself, but people that work in this trade. And it's not brought to the light. It takes a lot. It takes a lot of education. It takes a lot of dedication to stay in this time and time and time again.
This past Monday, I wrote in the email that I sent out every Monday morning, if you will, a little mini blog post was, we need to be a master communicator. And I was really trying to encourage. And oh, by the way, thank you for that incredible monologue. I appreciate that. And it's the kind of storyline that we need to talk more often to our communities. And to the point of being a master communicator was, by the way, on the soapbox that we need to have in social media and basically with our customers, we're a high tech industry. We're looking for people that want to play in that sandbox, but we also do all this other stuff and the commitments that we have, some, as you say, beyond the hours. Is people
it's where all the learning takes place.
Commitment to serving people.
That's the whole crux of, and not to drop name again, Matt Fanslow and his podcast is to tell that personal element.
The human side of our industry, I know. He's doing just an incredible job. Matt Fanslow is. I mean, how many times have we said that?
15.
All right, thank you very much. If anyone doesn't know,
we'll have to switch to Bob Hype next.
There was an episode with Pete Laundrie, Bob Hype. And Bob Hype, Matt Fanslow. And before we even turned the mics on, I said, we're going to see how many times we can say.
You didn't Scott even Mann. Know anything about it until I told you about it. And you went back and played it back and was like, how dare they hijack my podcast and do that to me?
And how many times they said, Matt Fanslow.
You should have known from the jump when you had those guys on with that trio that like it was going to be something.
Tracy, we should look it up and post it in this show notes. So I promise you, if you open the show notes, you'll see the link to that episode and you can count them.
There's like seven of them. Like they were like...
Oh, no, we did about seven or eight of them.
With the think tank, with the three of them.
Those were hoots.
And fabulous people in our industry. And that to speak to that same point, like many know, and John hates it when I tell the story, but John Thornton changed my life. He changed my career when I first saw him. For I was ready to leave and do something different. And Tim Hotelling would not take no for an answer when he came in my shop. And I went to my first JT class, and it was... not only career changing, it was life affirming. And John went to Linder and spoke about Linder. I went to Linder the first year. I met Matt Fanslow. I met Dan Baumart. I may have met Scott at that one. And then I went to Vision and I came here and I met so many people. And that it's the same thing, that if you don't break out of your shell while you're here, the people you meet, you know what I mean? Have similar life stories, have different life stories. You network, you know, you meet somebody that like, hey, I'm in the twilight of being a shop owner or whatever. Hey, Scott, Dave Denman, I heard you sold. Like, can you give me anything about that? You know, any information? And you know what I mean? Oh, contact this person or that person, or watch out for the finder's fees or things like that. But I mean, it's all a small, really, even though there's 3,500 people here, it is a small interconnected group of people. And like I said, we'll go on to Seattle here in 2 weeks and we'll have, you know, trainers there as well. And it's kind of in that sweet spot of training where everybody's kind of like roadies and go on the road.
Scott, what do you say to an owner when it happened yesterday with Tracy? It happened a few weeks ago with a friend of mine. I says, what kind of training are you sending your people for? And they say, my people don't and won't go to training. What do you tell them?
Wow.
Please get this through to our audience. But there's just too many. I mean, the reason you see the same faces here and the people that should be here. And then I say to them, well, who owns the business? And of course, they know why I was being sarcastic, because of what needs to happen. Is it the culture of the business that maybe the owner isn't going to training, so my people won't go? I mean,
there's a number of reasons why owners might not embrace and not want to send people to training. All of them are bad reasons, of course. So it's no surprise to anybody that the businesses that are the successful businesses, that become businesses that are worth a lot of money, are those businesses that embrace training. They empower their people. They trust their people. And they provide an adequate working environment for their people to stay. So one of the earliest issues that you used to hear, and I'm the old guy in the room, so I mean, I remember this industry from the 1980s, before there was really, there wasn't a vision to go to. Mm-hmm. You know, we were literally all a bunch of little independent businesses, little islands. We never really saw what went on in another shop. We just did our own thing all by ourselves. And the whole networking thing has really opened that up. But back in the days, a guy would say, I don't want to train my tech because if he gets too good, he'll leave me.
Yep.
Well, he shouldn't leave you if you're, you know, that's a business problem, and that's a problem, and every problem has a solution. And then that owner needs to find what that solution is. If that solution is coaching, if that solution is taking management classes, whatever that solution is, he needs the training as well. There's no reason for that person to leave, that you're just empowering that person. And it's really sad, and I'll wrap this up, but it's really sad to see that there's a lot of businesses that are in business for a long time that literally shut their doors. They don't sell their business. And those are the businesses that never embrace training. They don't have enough to sell. They're making it and they just make it for a long period of time. And then the owner just gets too tired and says, I'm done. I'm out. Yeah. I think I can make it on what I've saved over the years and what the government's going to give me, and I'm done. And the businesses that are good, they get out with a golden parachute. They have something viable to sell. Their business runs on a process. Those are the businesses that can run without the owner being there. Those are the guys that embrace the training. So don't take training. You're going to have issues. You're going to have problems. You need to have training, management training, as well as technical training.
Well, workaround is you could predicate, and I know several people, Dan Baumart used to, when he had a shop, would predicate their vacation time. My friend Kirk Collin requires it, that you have to have so many hours of training per year. And it's paid for training, but Dan used to go and would predicate their vacation time would be predicated on how many hours of training that you went and you attended. So, I mean, there are workarounds on it. I mean, I shut down business operations for half day Wednesday, all day Thursday, all day Friday. Like, we were hemorrhaging cash to be here, and we are buried when we go back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But I've got my full crew here, and it's an investment in them. And it's, to me, my one tech, Brian, always says that he operates at a very high bar. Sometimes there are classes that he really enjoys, and there are some of them that are he goes to or whatever. But he says the one thing that he always walks away from coming here is that he comes like recharged. It's about being around like-minded individuals. Mm-hmm. And like you said that look in the face when you see friends that you haven't seen for a long time. And like I said, not to be a wet blanket, but there are people that there's no guarantee that that person that you smiled and embraced that you're going to see at the next vision. So life is short, train hard.
How are we going to deal with this tsunami of technology coming at us, Dave? I mean, I know the answer is training.
I try to mix information, the taste of what you don't know,
okay,
but also encouragement. I had a chance to speak at a conference a while back in the keynote, and my title was How to Avoid I Hate Cars and the People Who Drive Them Syndrome. And that's the burnout. And I think we all get there. And it takes that, Eric, what you said, getting away from the shop, getting out here among like-minded people. That is one way to do it. It's expensive, but you have to encourage them any way you can. Even so, like apologize for the engineers that made it too complicated and made it hard to get a part off. And serviceability is horrible these days on anything. And it's overly complicated. They can't call the same part, does the same thing, the same, because there's no OBD2 common terminology with electrification. There's not. I mean, there's an SOB. That's not acronym for swear words. It's secondary onboard DM, diagnostic module. And there's an A, B, C, and so forth. Another model might call it an onboard charging module. So that's frustrating. And then they have the hype is like, are these going to be maintenance free? I'm not going to be working on them and all this stuff. And they're listening to the uneducated press on two different sides of the political extreme aisles. That's all they get. And then if they read a trade magazine, maybe they get some clarity and the truth that it's not going to be a empty bay. When more and more electrics are on the road, there's going to be out your wazoo chassis and suspension issues because they're heavier. And so I tell them all that up front. And then I say, okay, if you don't love vehicles, and Eric, you mentioned the service, the helping the person that was stranded along the road or the single mom and all that stuff, that nature that we got into this. We love cars. We love mechanical, electrical things. And we liked helping people. And we wanted it done quickly. If we didn't mind taking 6 months to do something, a lot of us would have been engineers. A lot of techs I know, I keep teasing Bernie Thompson. You're the engineer I wish my company had. He's like, yeah, he's a car guy, but he and a tool maker, developer, inventor, engineer. There are techs that they want to have it fixed now. That's the quick satisfaction.
Because we sell our souls 6 minutes at a time.
6 minutes at a time, exactly. That's not a bad thing because you make a smile. My dad taught me this a long time ago. You make a smile on a customer's face and you put some money in the cash register and that's an honorable good day. And it's your tire. tired. You get frustrated, but it's a good tired.
But to your technician, your Hatfields and McCoys or whatever the analogy you use, the selling of your soul 6 minutes at a time depends on which side of that 6 minutes you're on, whether you happen to be the installer so or the true. One that's collecting. And that's one of the things that I've always said needs to change in our industry is the pay scale on things.
Oh, definitely. That's a morale killer.
Yeah. And it's
I try to keep the morale up. I think that's at least 40% of my goal when I do training is to encourage, keep the morale up, and kind of keep the whole I hate cars and the people who drive them syndrome down to minimal.
This was fun. I think we may have changed a few lives out there, or at least kicked somebody upside the butt to make a commitment to training and to help grow their business and learn to deal with the tsunami. And all you got to do is read. And go to classes, right? One final thing for all of you. I'm going to ask you one question. I want you to, we'll go around the room. We'll do.
Start with me last because my name begins with C. I'm used to going last.
I thought you were Matt Fonslow sitting next to me. I'm sorry. Okay.
That's fine. Matt Fonslow's much better looking and younger.
We'll do Dave, we'll do Scott, and we'll do Eric. My question is, what do you love the most about what you do?
When they get it, you can almost hear a relay click. If there were a relay in a brain and they go, oh, yeah, I know. And they go, is this like this? And I go, just like that. So when I see they understand endomorphins dumping or whatever, I mean, my brain just starts celebrating.
It makes you come back, write another class, go out and give it.
It encourages me to continue to be obsessed with it.
Oh, maniac.
Yeah.
What do you love most about what you do, Scott?
Probably spins off the same thing, that it's always been enjoyable to be able to, and it's been a blessing, and I don't take it lightly, to be able to share knowledge. I certainly enjoy sharing the trials and tribulations and the hard work that I've gone through in the industry to share it, to see guys come forward. I used to be asked a number of times by other shop owners back in the day, like, why do you go out and do training around here? Aren't you training your competition? And I just never saw that. That never became an issue to me. I said, like, absolutely not. You know, we're all in this boat together. You know, we're all in this industry together. If you raise the lake, everybody's boat floats higher. Just don't worry about that. There's more than enough business out there and legitimate business. You don't have to worry about it. Do the job right, and everything else will take care of itself. And it's enjoyable to come to conferences. And I tell you, Eric's already said it. He said it much better than I can say it. But it's amazing how many really good people are in this industry. It's a shame to see a black eye on an industry that has so many dedicated, hardworking individuals in it that literally run through brick walls every day to get cars on the road and to get people moving. And this should be an industry that attracts people, doesn't drive them away.
Because the story's never told.
Wow.
And the rising water to lift the lake, like you had to leave the lake probably to come here, right?
Not quite yet. The boat hasn't launched yet.
Left Lori at the lake.
Let's have Matt Fonslow have his final. Eric Ziegler have his final say. What do you love the most about what you do, buddy?
Well, Scott hit it right on the head. 100%. And I wear many hats or whatever. I have one being a trainer part of the time. These gentlemen are mentors of mine. I've attended their training classes years ago. So to me, it's a way of paying it forward and paying homage to the great lessons that if I've seen far, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants like these two gentlemen. But it's a way of paying it forward. And as a company owner that is a mobile service provider, somebody asked me about an invoice or something, and it was, what invoice was it? And they said 25,000 or 25012 or something. And I looked it up, and it dawned on me that nobody calls me and says, hey, I want to give Eric some money and do this, or my company to do it, because they're not equipped, they're not trained, or they don't have the equipment to do it. So I always say that we have a symbiotic relationship with our customers. They need us to do something, and we need to get it right, or they don't call back. And that somehow hit me, and this isn't a boast on myself, but 25,000 times my little popcorn fledgling company had gotten it right 25,000 times, one car at a time. And that's a great feeling to know. And I can't think of 30 years in business what your RO numbers were for your shop. You know what I mean? Because people don't come back if you don't do the job right. And on that hat that I wear, I'm immensely proud of the people that I work with. And to be able to bring dealer level diagnostics and services to our industry partners and provide that at a high bar. And to be able to be, not that I see myself a kingmaker in any way, shape, or form, but to be able to have the first person you hire, and you can speak to this, sure, I'm sure as well, you worry about, like, not am I only feeding my family, but I got to feed their family. And with each subsequent employee that you, or I don't even use the term employee, with each other person that you have join your team, you realize that you are responsible for doing that. I'm immensely proud that from being having my exposure to John Thornton, Scott Manna, Dave Hobbs, people like that, that I've seen far enough that I was in the right place at the right time. I had the wherewithal to go out and try it and to be able to assemble a team that works together. And so I guess it falls back. My short answer is it all falls back to the people I work with, the people we service, and most of all, the people in this industry.
Well, guys, this is
including
a
Matt Fanslow.
Including Matt Fonslow. Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much. By the way, go to my website. You can search for Ziegler, Manna, or Hobbs and listen to more of the stuff that they've done on the show. And you've been so kind and shared your incredible story years ago, Eric. So thank you so much. I mean, Matt. thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity. And this has got to be the only time that I ever get confused skills-wise or appearance-wise with Matt Fonslow.
Thank you, Dave Hobbs, Delphi Technology, Scott Manna, and Eric Ziegler. Appreciate you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carm. It's a pleasure to be here. You're
appreciate
doing a great
the opportunity.
Job.
Okay. Thanks, Matt, for being here.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.